You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Chelsea fire head coach Thomas Tuchel after shock defeat to Dynamo Zagreb. A night to forget for Liverpool as they concede four goals to Napoli. Manchester City cruise to a 4-0 win as Erling Haaland continues his scoring run. And Tottenham win against 10-man Marseille thanks to a brace by Richarlison. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
That's right, Musty. And because the Premier League is back, so your chance to win $50,000 by Premier League Pick'em for free. You can become the next big winner. Download the NBC Sports Predictor app today, available in the App Store or the Google Play Store. Okay, my friend, really interesting week of Champions League football. Made even more interesting with some huge news that broke this morning. The sacking of Thomas Tuchel after his team lost 1-0 to Dynamo Zagreb last night. The sacking was seen to be more than maybe just the result in a series of results. That there seems to be other things that were at play here. But tell me where you are, mate. We spoke on the pod, didn't we, and said, you know, he needs to get things sorted and, you know, he'll have 6 weeks, we'll have so long. This came a little bit quickly and a little bit blindsided one or two people, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to say, Rob, is that we, you know, if something else has happened within the club, we don't know about it. Nobody, you know, very few people would know about it. If there's been a bust up, a disagreement, you know, you read stuff on the media and social media and newspapers and stuff and on the websites today, and maybe there's a thing about Ronaldo that he wanted him and Tuchel didn't want him. That side of it, we don't know. On everything else, the football side of it, it's crazy. It's crazy too early. Now, the Chelsea fans, and I've listened to lots of stuff today, you know, I think they're kind of split, Rob, what I've seen. Like, well, the football wasn't good. It's kind of slow, ponderous football. We've kind of talked about the football that he plays. But, I mean, the facts are this, that this guy's been helping Todd Boehly, the new owner of Chelsea, recruit players. And he said just recently, like, I've enjoyed the last few days being on the training ground working as a coach and not looking at players. Why would you, if you're the owner, I mean, what was the number? It's like $324 million.
$200 million on players.
On nine signings that he's he's recruited and wanted and brought to the football club. And Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, a player that, I mean, that the whole point of him coming was because he's worked with Tuchel before. And like his first game, like to fire him after that, it's way too early. Give the man, I mean, it's too late now. And it's like, I feel like this is already old news. Why wouldn't you give him like, Fofana's just started to play. Aubameyang started to play. Mm. There's a lot of good players that's come into the club. Well, okay then. Now we've got to get going, Thomas Tuchel. Now we've got to put this team together, build it, you know, get your key men in different spots. It was Havertz played up front with Sterling and Aubameyang. You're like, well, that looks kind of good. And Mount was in midfield and Reece James back as a wing back. So I would have expected, it hasn't been a great start. But given what's happening transitional-wise with the club, and there's no recruitment staff. I see somebody else, Rob, the chief international scout, was let go by Chelsea. So there's nobody of the previous regime there.
No.
And it seems like he's helped to bring in these players. And now to fire him is like, wow. I mean, football never ceases to amaze me. The sensible play, right, a few weeks now, let's see it. Because if we don't see it, understand. So it's another one, Rob, where I'm like, wow. Way too early. Again, I'll go back with my last comment. On my first comment on this was, unless something's happened that we don't know about.
Well, my first comment is, this is Chelsea.
Let me stop you. So why should it be the same? Why should it be the same? Yeah, but why should it be the same as different owner?
Yeah, but same old Chelsea, that's what they do, Rob. But, you know, it's go back historically through the past and the same things have happened. I mean, this is ridiculous when you back somebody to the tune of over $300 million. Mm. You buy players for his suited to the way he wants to play. I believe, and again, social media trying to have a few connections back in the UK to try and find a few things out. Rob, I'm hearing that there was a slight personality difference between the owner and Tuchel, that he wants to build a different culture, a different football club, have work in a different way. And maybe Tuchel is not the guy or hasn't worked. Maybe the Conte thing, he got a yellow card yesterday, Rob. Really interesting. And again, not sure. And at this point, we're talking about a podcast that we're doing, you know, nearly 5:30 Eastern time on the Wednesday after the games. But not seen one player, Rob, come out yet. Social media. You know me, just like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, there was something else, Rob, wasn't there? There was also a bit of talk about player unrest. And I know he's quite a harsh critic, isn't he?
Apparently. Apparently had a bit of a face on moving yesterday. Mm. Apparently, again, that you know, there's talk that, you know, I think like three different systems in play yesterday to try and get, you know, one time Raheem Sterling was central midfield, you know, and Ziyech at left wing back. And again, I'm just picking up on things that are out there, things I'm kind of hearing a little bit from the UK in terms of maybe there's a different personality, there's a different culture that's wanting to be set by the new owners. And Tuchel maybe didn't fit in that, maybe because of the results. But again, I'm with you. It feels way too early. It feels strange having backed a guy through the summer with the kind of players that you bring in, and then you kind of go, okay, you're off and we're going to bring somebody in who's going to have to pick the reins up, have two games a week of domestic football and Champions League football and all the rest, and hit the ground running, Rob, because we're going into a crazy spell of games now between now and in the break in November. So, just disappointing, really. And disappointing for Tuchel in that I think it's 100 games he's had, Rob. He's won 60 of them. He went into the club, first of all, and changed the defending, which was a big problem. They were way too easy to play against. Won them the Champions League. Won them the Super Cup. Won the World Club Cup. Was UEFA Coach of the Year. Was FA Cup finalist, League Cup finalist. You know, in a 20-month spell. That smacks to me of, this guy deserves a little bit longer, I think. It feels to me like he's done enough. There's enough there on that resume to say, OK, it's a bit of a rough time. We need to, you know, bed in now and we'll work together and start to grow the club and change the culture and personalities. It feels, Rob, to me, as though this decision was not based on a result. This decision was around, yeah. A manager's they're already talking to Graham Potter of So they've already got the targets. This was already being set up.
Just last before we move on to Potter and who else might be in for the job, Rob. I'm just interested, like, you know, we've just explained how the whole football recruitment side of this club has been gutted. It's been bare.
Yes, strange, yes.
So Todd Bowley, you know, and his knowledge of, I think, English and European football or world football, the sport basically is not great. He made this call. There's no other football expertise in the building.
He's working. I hear he's bought. I don't know. He's bought in or using. I believe he's bought in a data analyst, an analyst team who've done the research. So these were the guys behind Anthony Gordon. These were the guys behind Ronaldo. These were the guys. So whether he's taking advice from them or they're getting in his ear, and he's then saying, you know, these fit our metrics of players, and you know, maybe Tuchel's saying, you know, does he want the Ronaldo thing? Anthony Gordon maybe wasn't what he felt he needed. Mm. I think Rafinha and Richarlison and others were on that list. It seems to be, Rob, that he's going down the science route, and whether he's bedded in that, got experience in that, maybe through his other sports and his other franchises, it seems that that's where he's getting his football knowledge from.
It just doesn't make any sense, Rob. It doesn't make any sense. You've just trusted him to bring all the players in. You talk about the data and stuff like that and the different targets. Well, he kind of acquiesced, and Tuchel's brought in the players he wants to bring in. It's like, okay, let them coach now. So listen, we can probably go over it and over it and over it. What I would say, Rob, in terms of the football, and we've been saying it a long time, or I've been saying the way the football is, so slow. And this game was the same thing. They lose the game. It was incredibly slow and lacking intensity, and there's no penetration and the same kind of stuff. Front players, the same story, struggling to have impact. You know, he changes them, makes subs. You know, it was something that needed to improve. But I mean, to fire Thomas Tuchel at this point is an incredible big play. It's a big play by the ownership, and I hope they know what they're doing, Rob. And you know, we can go on now and talk about people who are coming. Unless you want to talk about the game, I mean, there's not much to say about it.
There's not much to say. One big interesting. Kepa came in for Mendy, which was an interesting big call. Fofana started. Was probably for the goal, really. For the goal that went in. It was a similar clunky, stodgy kind of Chelsea. You know, not slick, not no rhythm at times. For the quality of player, the football doesn't quite add up, and they're not quite sure why. You know, with the quality of technical operators that they've got, I don't know why they can't dominate games better, play quicker football, create more chances. But having said that, they had a couple of chances. Aubameyang had a couple of looks, probably should have done better. Havertz has a header late on. Reece James hits the post. Well, Kepa, to be fair, came up with a brilliant save. Yeah. The one-handed onto the crossbar. That's going to be interesting for Newman, whoever that is. Yeah. You know, Mendy was the number one. Had a little bit of rocky form, you know, possibly for a couple of goals. Certainly the West Ham equaliser that would have been it if it was given at the weekend. And Kepa in now. So, you know, what does a new man do who comes in? Does he put Mendy back and give him the confidence and say, you're my man until you let me down? Or does he keep Kepa in? And, you know, so many question marks for whoever comes in. And at this point, we'd have to say it does look like Graham Potter certainly favourite. He's in talks with the football club at the moment. Talking about a multi-year contract. I think there's a £20 million buyout clause of Potter's contract from Brighton that Chelsea would obviously have to pay. And they're talking that if they can get things done quickly and well, that they'd like him installed for the weekend.
Well, there's three names, isn't it, Rob, that came up straight away. Graham Potter, Mauricio Pochettino and Zinedine Zidane. And it seems like Graham Potter is the number one choice. And I think they've agreed the fee with the club. The club has given Graham Potter, you know, he can talk to Chelsea about this position. I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation between Graham Potter and Todd Bowley and whoever else is in the room about what we're looking at here. Because I'll say right now, I'm not sure, and this is it's such an interesting conversation, that it's the right fit for Graham Potter. What I want to quickly caveat that by saying, I get that the managers at this level, and we spoke about it so recently, Rob, on the show last podcast about
podcast. You know,
managers that do a great job, their stock price is really high, and then it can go.
We're talking
again.
About Brendan Rodgers, Robin, where he was and where he's dropped in Graham Potter now.
So I understand if he's going to go for this, and I mean, maybe these opportunities don't come around. So I get that, and that's very powerful, and that might win out. All I would say is, I feel that Graham Potter, Rob, is more of a planning manager, more of a longer-term guy, more of a builder, more get in tune with the club and get a great setup recruitment-wise and do amazing in that side of things. This is different. This is more glamour, more instant, more, you know, if Todd Bowley is going to be, that's going to keep your Chelsea way going where they're going to fire people, crikey, he could be out of a job in blooming 6 months if things don't turn around. Now, again, what... And this is just chatting to our Spurs producer, Mike, happens on this podcast, Rob. He's a Spurs fan. And I said to him, I would like to see, and again, this is just my opinion and stuff, but I think he should wait at Brighton for the Tottenham Hotspur job because Antonio Conte is going to last a certain amount of time. He's a project manager. And you know what happens, Rob, when a manager gets fired from a club, there's an instant desire to go opposite. An opposite of Antonio Conte is a long-term, safe, steady, attractive football. And Graham Potter is absolutely perfect for that. He'll get the stability of Daniel Levy, that will give him time. There'll be patience. You know, I feel that that's more of a building project than him coming into Chelsea, where he'd be expected straight away to handle big time players. Like, he's never, I mean, to a Champions League experience. My goodness, what a position to be thrown into, Rob.
A counter to that, Rob, and I hear your argument and agree in many ways with a number of things you say, but I suppose some of our viewers or listeners and people would say, well, what's the big difference between Chelsea and Spurs? Maybe apart from Chelsea won more trophies. Same big clubs, same ambition.
The philosophy.
Yeah, that we know. But I don't think, and I agree, because one of my notes on Graham Potter was, Graham Potter builds teams and builds success over a period of time. Yeah. He's a slow burn manager.
Right, exactly.
But top six jobs are not slow burn wherever you go, Rob. Look at Ten Hag went in at Man United. Yeah, the first two games got wiped out, and then he's had to find his way and find. I agree with you that it's not the most natural fit for Graham Potter. I do think we're going to be in the David Moyes getting the opportunity at Manchester United position. I'm not sure if you're Graham Potter, you can turn it down.
I get that. But
absolutely not sure.
Yeah, I know. And it's all right for me to say we'll wait for the Spurs job. There's a ton of things that can happen. And I understand that. And you're probably going to be right. That's why I said it straight away. He probably is going to be appointed. And got to be honest, I'm excited to see what he can do, because he's a brilliant coach.
Can I chuck one at you as well? And it's a bit left field, and it's not the same, and it's a different era and all that. But the Graham Potter style, the man, the intelligence, the coaching ability, the management skills, the systems of play we've seen. He looks a bright, smart, young coach. You know, we've talked about for weeks and years, actually. We've talked about him. I know the question is going to come up, and I'm sure when we get the weekend, like, people will say, well, he hasn't handled big players. And I kind of want to poo-poo that one a little bit, because... And I'm going to make a little example, maybe different backgrounds from different places. But Arsene Wenger came in at Arsenal from Japanese football. I'm sure he got almighty stick for looking like a school teacher. People were like, oh, we'll never be able to do it at Arsenal. And if you're a confident, good coach, that players instantly can respect, see what you're doing, think they're going to get better, you have no problem with big players. You have a problem with big players if you're not good enough. If you go in there and you're winging it a little bit. And you're
what about big players that are not playing?
Well, that's something you'll that's have different. To learn. But he's a smart guy, Rob. He ain't no fool going in there. He went off and studied, I think he's got 2 degrees in different things. He went abroad and learned. Yeah. He's a very smart, worldly guy. And I think that's the kind of people who you can live, who big players can live with. If you're honest and truthful, and listen, it's a consequence of big things. I'm not saying Neil Mopay is a big player, but he's had to deal with his issues in his own football club, and he's done that the way. I just think if we don't give people a chance, we can't always keep saying, Alex Ferguson, when he came in from Aberdeen, wasn't handling the Robsons and the McGraths and the Whites and the people. But he handled them, he sorted it out eventually, and he got where he got to. And I think we've got to give people a chance to do that, not just sort of be jumped down that, well, he's never handled big players. Big players will react to top managers, top coaches.
Yeah, they will. Listen, and that's one angle of this, isn't it? And you're right. I mean, at some point, every up-and-coming manager is going to jump a level where, all right, I'm dealing with this sort of player. Now, I get that.
Yeah.
It's more about the philosophy of the club. Now, if Todd Bowley has sat him down and said, you know what, I've signed Fofana on a 7-year deal.
Yeah.
I've got Reece James on a 6-year extension. I want this to be a long-term situation. Then absolutely brilliant. If that's the bed he's going to go into, brilliant. Yeah. And we won't know that. I that conversation.
He's bought Chukwuemeka from Villa. He's put Brozier on a long contract. He's got Gallagher, Cucurella, somebody knows. It feels like the long term is important as well.
He wanted Ronaldo, didn't he? He wanted Ronaldo.
Yeah, that's all it is now. I assume for commercial value as much as anything else, this guy's a businessman. But listen, we're going to have to see how that plays. And maybe Graham Potter's a smart enough guy to probably understand, Rob, if it isn't for him, I think he's big enough and ready to go. Yeah, actually,
I think so.
This doesn't work.
He'll stay
for
where he's at.
Yeah.
The other name, Rob, before we move on, you know, in terms of somebody that I got to be honest, I think would be a better fit is Mauricio Pochettino. I know that his stock prices, his stock's down a little bit given his tough times at PSG. But in terms of Champions League experience, Premier League experience towards the top end, dealing with all that stuff, I mean, he ticks a lot of those boxes. But I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I want to see it. I want to see. We've said this for so long. Like,
I'd like to see Graham Potter go in. I'd like to see him go in. And
I just hope he's given some patience, mate. I hope it's just not going to be.
Don't you feel though, Rob? If Graham Potter goes in, almost like it feels different. So the fans might react to him differently. It's not one of those. You know, all the other managers gone to Chelsea are high end, top class European operators who've won leagues, who've won European titles.
I don't know.
This guy's going in different. This guy's English. He's come up from, you know, the lower leagues. Is earned his opportunity. Now he's going in to see if he's good enough to manage at that level. I just think that people might give him a chance.
Well, see, I don't know. They're used to success. They're used to this club firing managers. They've had one of their own in Frank Lampard come in, great, and then all of a sudden
Frank wasn't
gone.
Great. Frank didn't do
well.
Great
all right. So I agree. If he's great, he's great, and everybody's happy. But if he's not great, what happens then?
But if he's
how
not
long
great,
the fans give him?
But if he's not great, whether he's a European winner, if he's Angelotti or he's Graham Potter, if he doesn't win games, enough games, he'll get the sack. He'll know that. But I just think he might get a little. I think he might get a little bit more time because it's a longer process, and it's the owner's guy. Mm. When owners go into football clubs. However you like it, they tend to want to get their own man in the door.
Yeah. All right, mate. Brilliant. I mean, amazing. I woke up this morning you just never know. You never know what you're going to wake up to. And I didn't see that coming. I did not see that coming so quickly.
When I saw the Tuchel, we got a link from our main producer. I saw the link for Tuchel. I thought it was going to be one of those articles where, you know, Tuchel's had a meeting with the owners and they've said, you know, we've got to sort things out. I just didn't think it was Tuchel. When I clicked on the link and opened it, I was like, what?
Wow. I know. Yeah.
It was incredible. Incredible. But a defeat as well. Obviously, set that off. So not a good start for Chelsea in the Champions League. Not a great start in the league as well. So some work for whoever the new man. And obviously over the next few days, we'll keep you abreast of that. Hopefully by the weekend's podcast, Musty, there might be a new man in charge.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
All right,
okay, let's move it to Italy, to Napoli. Napoli versus Liverpool. Always a great fixture. Apparently, Jurgen Klopp, I think, lost the last four times he's been at Napoli now with teams. Which I was surprised about. Shocked by the headlines, because you were watching this game. I kept an eye more on Tottenham and Marseille, so we're across both games.
Yep.
I couldn't quite believe when I saw 4-1. It was like, not quite at the Tuchel level, but wow. It was like, really? Where are Liverpool? Is this becoming more serious?
Yeah, I mean, it is serious now. You know, we can say, you know, they haven't quite found this and they're not this and that. And of course, you know, we know about the high line, and for the majority of last year, it was pretty good. Like, they'll take that risk given what they did at the other end and to be so close to win the title. But this, mate, this got to go down as the worst 45 minutes I've seen from Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp, to a point where, I mean, they gave away two penalties. They could have had four or five goals, Napoli, in the first half, mate. I'm not even joking. Like, Liverpool, the vulnerability of that back line was insane. Like, any time, and it happened lots of times, the ball turned over, Napoli flipped the ball over the top. Asherman, the big striker, this young striker that there was a bit of rumour wasn't coming to a few teams in the Premier League, gets on the other end of it. They got in so many times. I mean, Joe Gomez, Rob, played centre-back, and he had a nightmare, to be fair, and, like, I feel for him. Like, it happens sometimes. Van Dijk, I thought, looked shaky and was losing his edge a little, his rag a little bit. He was getting frustrated. Trent Alexander-Arnold was so many times out of his right back spot. Yeah, so when when those counters come in, it was two at the back. It was two at the back for Liverpool. This is worse than I've seen, Rob. And, you know, second half, like, I don't know, a little bit better. Possibly they get a goal. Luis Diaz was the only player that got any sort of credit from the game, Rob. He gives everything all the time, which is pretty remarkable. Mo Salah in the first half, and I'm not joking, couldn't control the ball. Couldn't control the ball. Went under his foot once. He failed to bring a ball down. He's right in front of goal from, I think it was a Trent cross with his left foot.
How can this be, Rob, from a team who've pushed Man City so far, have gone so far in the Champions League? We know how important this competition. How can this drop-off be from the team we saw, you know, albeit it's a week before the season, but Community Shield, they go flying into Man City, they win the game, they look like they're all set up. And then from that day forward, it's not really... the 9-0 at Bournemouth apart, we'll take that out of the frame. Bournemouth was shocking. Liverpool had a good day, scored the goals, that thing, fine. Apart from that, Rob, how is Salah not be able to control the ball? How is the intensity and the focus of Liverpool?
Well, that's it.
That's not easy to get back. If you've lost it and you don't know why it is, that's not an easy thing to fix.
I think there's a couple of things, right? The first thing is intensity, desire, hunger. Things I'm writing down as you're talking there. That is not there. Now, I don't know why. There's a bit of talk now, of course. Everybody starts talking. What's going on? Things aren't right at Liverpool. You know, things. What's going on behind the scenes or whatever? That's one part of it. The second part of it is game plan. And it is Jurgen Klopp's responsibility to address something that's kind of been there in it on the edge, this high line. It's not so much the high line. I understand the high line by having your team play high and you want to attack and you want to keep away from your goal. I get that. But when there's a turnover, you can drop off. It's the good old-fashioned Arsenal offside trap. They try and play offside on these counters. So when you see a Napoli player in midfield get it, you got the two centre-backs particularly that are just edging. He's offside. Like, it's the old-fashioned offside
the gamble.
Track.
Yeah, the gamble offside,
And of course, when the ball's played and he's offside, it's brilliant. Blow the whistle. You still keep the game in where you want it to be, and it's great. But at the moment, particularly when Gomez plays, I think Matip has a better understanding of the offside with Van Dijk. That offside trap is in bits. It's a shambles in terms of that. So that means anytime the ball goes over the top, they're out of it. Now, that's got to be, mate, a rethink. Jurgen Klopp has got to sit down with his coaches. I think it's come to the point where we know we've got great players going forward. It's turned Liverpool, Rob, over the last couple of seasons from intensity and pressing and counter-pressing, all the stuff that the buzzwords we use with them. It went away to a bit more possession, and look, they're doing it a different way now. And they had been, and they almost won the title on it last year. But this from the start of the season and the nature of this performance and others in the Premier League, they got away a few times, they got some late goals or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's got to be a rethink, because this simple ball over the top, I mean, any team that wins quickie up front, they're going to get chances in behind. And it was a really, really... If you're a Liverpool fan, Rob, and before you might be, we haven't quite found it. You know, people are going to come good. This was, screech the brakes, take the flipping record, you know, scratch the record off. Okay, something's got to be done now, because that was incredible. And Napoli, we can give them a ton of credit. Simeone scores the goal. Anguissa, remember Anguissa from Fulham, midfield player?
Anguissa,
scored a lovely goal, played a little 1-2, got in behind, slotted in really nicely. Zielinski got the penalty, scored a goal later in the game, 47th minute. I mean, Napoli was superb, but that for Liverpool, that is not acceptable, and it's going to be fascinating. I didn't get a chance to listen to Jurgen Klopp afterwards about what he's going to say and what he's going to do. But there's some interesting times ahead, because that was not like Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp as we've seen it over the last multiple seasons.
No, not at all. Like you say, I think it was a bit of shock for Liverpool and teams around Europe. Be interesting how he gets things back to Gordon and yeah, I've got a few injuries as well, haven't he? So he's talking about, you know, doesn't have the depth maybe that other
teams. Yeah, Thiago came back. Thiago was back in. Jota came back in. So people are coming back now.
Yeah.
And maybe, because Milner played a midfield, Rob. Again, Milner, he gave the penalty away. He threw his arm out a little bit. Mm. He was then booked. This is all in 10 minutes. Thiago is back. Javier Elliott does a good job. Yeah. Fabinho. So maybe
the crisis talks
held off whilst he gets his first team back.
Yeah.
So maybe he can point to that as something of a reason of, listen, we'll get back to our best Liverpool. But that was far from it.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the tree of life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Yeah, well, somebody who did have a good day and got four goals, scored for Manchester City. No surprise, Erling Haaland gets himself another brace. I mean, incredible scoring. Was it 12 goals in seven games now? We were together, weren't we, watching some of this game. I mean, City basically just way too much for a Sevilla team that is not playing particularly well anyway in their own league. But City, as strong as ever. Midfield three of KDB, Rodri and Silva. Front three of Foden, Haaland and Grealish. Jack Grealish getting the start. Their football was good. They continue to build up. Kevin De Bruyne looks in absolutely tip-top nick at the moment. He gets into one of his favourite spots. Sings the ball across and guess who's there on the far post. Not quite a jumping volley this time, but just a good position, far post with the side foot volley. Haaland gets his goal, gets City off and running, and then it's a matter of how many. A lot of talk, Robert, about Haaland. Pep, after the game, was interesting that he said, we can't win the Champions League with just Erling Haaland. It's about a team. And I thought it took me back to, remember the Pep saying a couple of years ago, was it when Pochettino was in charge of Spurs? It's a Harry Kane team.
Yeah,
and, you know, a lot of people are going to call this the Erling Haaland team because it's about the goal score, and Pep's making a big thing. It's about other things and other parts that was interesting. As we were watching the game yesterday, we were sort of discussing one or two things, weren't we? And we know the Kane and Haaland sort of comparison will come up this weekend when the two teams play at the Etihad on Saturday afternoon. But I was thinking about his biggest skill, Rob, is his physicality and all those natural attributes are brilliant, but his biggest skill is being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it is. And with an insatiable hunger to score. I mean, that's in built in him, which is amazing. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you have a day where Kylian Mbappe scores these wonderful volleys, and it's really fun to watch. And there's a, you know, you can juxtapose the two players when you watch the highlights, and they're very different. Two of the hottest strikers on the planet, yes, but they do it very differently. I mean, Man City have changed the way they play. I went back, Rob, this morning, I watched the game again. Because when we were out and about, I wanted to see it again and just make a few observations about City side. And first off, everything's kind of been simplified. Just based on this one and maybe some of the other games where it's almost a 4-4-2, by the way. De Bruyne is pretty much up front with Erling Haaland. Yeah. On the right-hand side, as you said, Phil Foden and Grealish. Grealish, still not looking comfortable. Got to say it. They won the game. He's still not providing the output and the quality that I think the club and his manager expects. Again, I will see. I think that was pretty obvious. But what I'm saying about the simplest system, it's kind of 4-4-2. And there were so many crosses in this game. And I think they've realised that if they feed this guy in the box, he attacks everything. Almost every ball that goes into the box, he's competing for. So that's kind of a very simpler way of playing for City. We'll see if that over the long haul is going to provide better results, better outcomes. Tough to beat the league. You know, whether that's going to make a difference in the Champions League, I don't know. But the connection, you said it, another goal. The connection of Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland, I'm guaranteeing it, is going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. If those two players stay fit for 75% of the games, those numbers are going to be mad, because every time De Bruyne picks a ball up, and what he does as well, by the way, and our listeners and watching folks out there, he plays as number, starts at number 10. His favourite move is to pull deeper into the inside right position, and he gets it out of his feet and he's swinging these balls in for cross, or he's slapping it along the ground in between defenders for him to run in behind. So the two of them, and there was actually a moment in the game, Rob, I remember we chatted about it, like where Erling played in De Bruyne and he should have scored. The goalkeeper made a good save. So simple football, the two of them combining is amazing. City have changed their attacking third kind of priorities, less intricate getting behind, pull back for tap-ins, more they'll do that, but if need be they'll swing the ball in for crosses because he's amazing at attacking them. So I mean, yeah, they look amazing.
And in some respects, right? Rob, it's just when you talk about the simplicity, is it's just another option, I think, and that's what this City team now got, because if they need to go back to some slightly more intricate false nine, or if he got injured, they can probably go back to that as well. Do you know what I mean? But right now, maybe more efficient, maybe less demanding, and be able to just put balls in. You don't have to work the ball all the way to the byline where they used to and pull across. Yeah. Now they can cross from 18, 20 yards out, mate, and you've still got that same threat, and he's gonna get you, you know, incredible amount of goals, as well as all the other talented players underneath him. It's interesting, Rob, because he has been involved in some build-up play, but he's much more about the box. He's not like Harry Kane, I sense, gets joy from coming deep and playing people in and joining in. Haaland doesn't.
Don't need to do it.
He's that bothered now. Yeah. In that team, he's got players who can do that. You've got Gundogan, you've got KDB, you've got Silva, you've got Foden, Grealish, Mahrez. Why do I need to come in there create that, block that space off for him, just get himself in the box, make sure he's at the end of the move and put it in the back of net. And he's doing that pretty well at the moment, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, just another couple of things, Rob, just again, watching it again a little bit. The young fullback, left fullback, Sergio Gomez, a 22-year-old starting left back. He's got a nice left foot. Again, he's going to serve balls in for the big man up front. Manuel Akanji, the big centre-back, started this game. Yeah. Big, strong guy, like that's going to be interesting, because when we start to get to the later stages of Champions League, I think we start to think about good teams playing against City, and defensively they've got to be stronger than
one-on-one.
I mean, they've teams do a job on them over two legs, so I thought just watching those two players is interesting. And the last thing I want to mention in this game, Rob, that is a player that we've talked about before, Phil Foden's quality. I mean, he scores a lovely goal, Rob. He scores a lovely goal. Yeah. What a lovely footballer he is. Mm. Wherever you want to play him, he switched flanks. He went from right to left later on. Like Bernardo Silva, well, we already started. Jack Grealish went off or whatever. I mean, what a lovely footballer. This team, I mean, in its a little bit simpler version, don't have to look good. And there's tons of players to come in, Gundogan and Mahrez and others that you mentioned. So with those new players, they're wing at a canter. They look pretty sweet at the moment, mate. And another example, Sevilla, you know, tried their best and they kept it fairly quiet. But as soon as Haaland scored, you know, the goals came in the second half, and it was a very comfortable night again for Manchester City. Impressive stuff.
Yeah, very impressive win. It can obviously would probably be people's favourites to win it with Haaland at the top of the pitch.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Bet too far against them. I was watching the Tottenham-Marseille game, mate. Spurs at home. Big atmosphere, Marseille ball, plenty of fans. So, you know, great occasion at the new White Hart Lane Stadium. It was Spurs team with Romero, Dier and Longley as the three centre-backs. He had Perisic at left-back, on the other side. And up top, Richarlison got the start with Son and Kane. So Kulusevski went to the bench, which was interesting. I've got to be honest, Rob, this game, Sloppy Spurs. I mean, for 20 minutes.
Not playing well, but just winning. That, like, that's the story.
Well, I mean, second half was a bit better. Conte definitely got into it. But first off, Rob, they were sloppy with the possession. Marseille had a nice high press on. You think it's well set up for Spurs to counter-attack. They didn't put 3-4 passes together, give the ball away easily. It was really disjointed. And pardon me, they got the job done. Second half was better. Richarlison got a couple of goals, two-headed goals. He's going to be important to him, Rob Richarlison. Yeah, he's a great little buy.
Yeah, he's a great buy.
Kulusevski came on the pitch. Spurs went to a back four in the second half and looked a bit more dangerous. And say Richarlison got his goals. I didn't actually realise the first games he'd ever played in Europe because he's never played in European competition. So it was his first European games. He got a couple of goals, which is great. And obviously sort of gives the manager something to think about with the weekend coming up. Obviously, Spurs go into Manchester City and a couple of goals. You know, does he keep him in the team? If so, who drops out? Who misses out? Is it Kulusevski who misses out again? Son again didn't get his goal, came off a little bit later second half. But second half was a little bit better. But for Spurs' advantage, Marseille had a player sent off after 42 minutes. And Mbemba got fouled Son. Son is running through trying to go towards goal. He's the last man, takes him down. Referee has no option but to give him a red card. So pretty much 48 minutes on the clock. You know, they had to play the rest of the second half with 10 men. And for the spell, Marseille didn't look too stretched. Spurs, again, weren't really making much of possession. Eventually, Perisic puts a ball in, and Charlton gets his head to it, changes the whole atmosphere, and then he gets a second goal. But sort of my takeaway with the Spurs, and it's very much similar to what we said, certainly not playing great, but we rely on the front guys this time. It was Charlton's day to get the goals. But almost in the first 20 minutes, Rob, the tone was set in the game that I sometimes think it's going to be harder for Spurs to grab control of games if they continue to give the opposition or allow
it's
the
like,
opposition.
It's like Wolves, Rob. Is it like Wolves where like they just the crowd were up for it and then the longer the first half goes on, they get quieter and quieter and quieter. It's like, well, this is like pretty rubbish.
Yeah,
really,
the crowd, I mean, the Marseille crowd were the ones making noise and the Spurs fans were just watching really like, well, this ain't great. It's 0-0, but this ain't a great watch. And lots of excitement, first Champions League games of the season. And, it was a bit weird. It was a bit weird. And I just don't know how Spurs get a better foothold early in a game to compete for a bit of possession. And it's almost like they just go back foot, passive, sit there, and the other team start playing and start getting a bit of confidence and like the ball and build a bit of rhythm up. And eventually they're going to create chances.
I think a couple of things, Rob. I think first off, I think it's still, there's obviously improvement there and they're still winning games. And it's like, I think it will get better. I think they will become a better footballing side when they find a bit more rhythm and a little bit more confidence with the ball and be a tiny bit more expansive. I know that Conte's scared of conceding goals and I get it. And that's really important to him, but I think they will get better. Question for you, Lonley, defender, you know, he's one of the new ones and potentially making their 11 better. It's often Ben Davis left. In the back, Lonley played in it, Rob. It's just Lonley, Dyer and Christian Romero, wasn't it, the back three?
Yeah.
So how was Lonley? How does he look?
Actually, he looks pretty solid, I think. Nothing like, it's not world-beating, but he doesn't look like he's going to make major mistakes. He looks pretty solid and you know, gives a balance on that side. Works quite well with Perisic down that side. I've got to be honest, Rob, on the day, Romero didn't play particularly well today. Looked a bit off. Yeah, he's not been a little bit disappointing. I know he had a bit of an injury, didn't he, in the season and off. He came off late on. Tanganga came on for him late on, which I don't know if he's carrying a knock or. But yeah, just didn't look quite. You know, we've talked about him and liked him and said, you know, that aggression and that little bit of power he brings something important. So still feeling the way, I think, Spurs, in a number of areas. It wasn't a great day for Sonny and Kane. Had a couple of chances, wasn't quite on. Again, you know, great that they've got a Richarlison now that can come in and you know, give him that little bit extra up front. But, still plenty of work to do for Conte. He said, you know, he's pleased to get the win and get them off and running. But I think he'll know they'll have to play better than that in this competition if they want to go deep.
They might have played better than that as well, Rob, when they play Man City on Saturday, 12:30 Eastern time. Massive game. Just have a quick think about that. Well, we know it's going to be dominated by the two strikers on show for both sides. Yeah. But talk about like two teams at this other end of the scale in terms of their philosophies, proactive versus reactive. And I tell you, it's not a foregone conclusion for me that City are going to win this game, given how they throw people forward and Tottenham are very, very good counter-attackers. It's going to be fascinating. Yeah. What's your gut telling
you about similar. And just that we saw City last week against Villa score first, have a load of chances not taken, Villa get back, you know, if it's only one or it's nil-nil is what Conte's been able to do with his team, even when they're not particularly playing well, they haven't conceded. And then they go on and you know, that front three can hurt. And you talked about City's issues with the fullbacks probably going in a little bit narrow. If they turn the ball over with Kane, Richarlison's in good nick at the moment. And Son, if he plays, or Kulusevski, who came on and did quite well. Spurs are probably the team most likely to upset Man City with the way they play. And they did it twice last season, and they feel they've got a bit of a benchmark to know how to go and get results. So City need to dominate, as we know they will, but put the chances away, and Haaland obviously is a big part of that, to give themselves a break. That when Spurs do break, you know that they all got the goal up, or be aware that that's going to happen.
Matchups to watch for in that one, Rob. Just before we move on, and just do a little quick wrap of the other games. Christian Romero against Erling Haaland. Yeah. I mean, we know he's tough and as aggressive as they come. Mm. So he's got hopefully he's not got a problem, Rob, injury. I know he
mix it up a little bit of physicality, a little bit in Dyer as well. It's a day to, give Eric Dyer a slap around the face before he goes out and get him in angry mode. And you're going to have to be aggressive with this guy. Because if not, he'll dominate you and he'll cause you problems. But yeah, it should be good. Should be a great game. Looking forward to that one, mate, on Saturday. Should we just round up a few other results from the week? Tuesday, Dortmund 3, Copenhagen 0. Benfica 2, Maccabi Haifa 0. Celtic got beat 3-0 by Real Madrid. What a great atmosphere. I saw some of that game at South Park. What a great atmosphere up at there. Madrid keep doing their stuff. And Luka Modric, I think, got the second goal, Rob, didn't he? What a little gem that fellow is. Absolutely beautiful little goal. Yeah. PSG 2, Juventus 1-2. Mbappe goals, wasn't it? The volley and then...
lovely one. Lovely scoop from Neymar's little scoop over the top. Yeah. And flipping out, he looks sharp, and Mbappe. Top, and talk about them starting to really find some form now. Yeah. There's a new manager there, but we'll talk about PSG in the later rounds.
Possibility to win it.
They got so many good players. I did see the late Antoine Griezmann goal for Atletico Madrid 2-1 against Porto. Rob, the late goal scores for Diego Simeone, sprints down the sideline, gets involved with all the players and the team, and massive celebrations there at their stadium. And a bunch of other results. Bayern Munich win against Inter Milan, which is a big game. Ajax put 4 past Glasgow Rangers.
Which was a bit sad for Rangers back in the competition.
Yeah, Pilsen 5-1, Barca win.
Yeah, Lewandowski got a hat-trick, didn't he? I think he's first person to get hat-tricks for 3 teams in Champions League now. Lewandowski,
brilliant. Yeah, it's great. Competition's great.
Yeah, this is a tournament to be in, isn't it, if you want to win things. Okay, mate, good start to Champions League as ever. Good wins for Spurs and Man City, but really bad defeats for Liverpool and Chelsea. A 1-0 loss against Solberg, enough to cost Thomas Tuchel his job. There'll be more on this, and we'll follow this over the weekend. So look out for our weekend podcast. That's on Sunday, September the 11th. And Chelsea probably have a new manager, and could be Graham Potter. And we'll view the big game from Saturday at the Etihad, Manchester City host Spurs. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. We'll see you on Sunday. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.